This week I made some pancakes for dinner. One day, our technical director across the board from me, Sarah Hopeful, says she had pancakes on multiple occasions this week. Pancakes are fun, delicious, and appropriate for whatever meals you want them to be, or dessert. From buttermilk pancakes to gluten-free flapjacks, we are all about the griddle discs here. I ran out of synonyms. I made that one up earlier today. On this week's edition of Food Friday, we take a deep dive into pancakes and get some tips on the best ways to make them. Julia Collin Davison is the executive editorial director for America's Test Kitchen and host of America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Country TV shows. Julia, welcome back to Central Time.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, how did pancakes become thought of as such a breakfast staple, do you think?
They're fast. You know, it's a quick bread batter, so that means there's no yeast involved. And, you know, it's like a cake, but it's done on a griddle, so it's super fast. I like that you said you have them for dinner. We have breakfast for dinner at my house a lot. I love breakfast for dinner.
Now, we've got some recipes from you at America's Test Kitchen that'll tell us how to make good pancakes. I want to figure out how to not make bad pancakes. I haven't done this in a while, but I've had things go wrong in the past where they end up being too flat, a little, I don't know, rubbery, I guess is the word I would use. What are some of the common pancake pratfalls?
Yeah, so if you're using white flour, this actually doesn't happen if you use all wheat flour, but if you use white flour, you really don't want to over mix the batter. You want to leave it a little lumpy. Don't worry, those lumps will disappear during cooking. But the more you mix a batter that has regular white flour in it, the more gluten structure you build. And the more gluten structure, the more chew. Gluten is great for bread. That gives the chew, that gives it the crust. But you don't, if you don't want a chewy pancake, you don't want to build up too much gluten. So that's rule number one. The other idea is, you know, the skillet has to be the right temperature. If it's too hot, it gets too dark on the outside and it's kind of underdone in the middle, or vice versa, you feel like you have to cook it, overcook it, so it's dried out because it's not getting any color. And that's tricky, you know, like because the skillets on the stovetop, skillets heat up, they cool down, everyone's stove's a bit different, every skillet's a bit different. So that's where a little bit of experience comes in, but also don't hesitate to do that all-important test pancake at the beginning. It doesn't have to be a big one. It could just be a little pancake to let you know how hot your skillet is.
Now, you mentioned white flour.
What'd you say?
Oh, you mentioned white flour versus wheat flour. And, you know, as a parent, I'm sometimes like, I want to sneak in a little bit of fiber and grain in here, but I hit a point where I add too much wheat flour. It seems like I need more liquid. How do we get a little bit of a healthier flour into the mix without making bad pancakes?
Yeah, you know, wheat flour, surprisingly, is awesome for pancakes. Now, in many ways, wheat flour and many other kinds of bread, it can make lead bricks because wheat flour doesn't actually build gluten as well as white flour because the bran that's in there, the outside, it's actually pretty sharp on a microscopic level, and it cuts the gluten strands. So whereas wheat flour makes like a brick of a loaf of bread, it makes deliciously fluffy pancakes. And actually, have you ever made your own wheat flour by grinding wheat berries?
I have never done that, no.
It is a game changer.
Really?
Absolute game changer. You can just do it in your blender. If you have a high-end blender, it doesn't take any time at all. But even just a basic blender, you can make wheat flour. And I got to tell you, it's the flavor. Because wheat flour can go bad pretty fast. The wheat flour you're buying in the store has some age on it. And sometimes it can taste a little funky. And people don't like that flavor. When you grind it yourself, it tastes sweet. It tastes like a whole different animal. And then suddenly you can make whole wheat pancakes with 100% whole wheat flour, and your kids will love them. It almost tastes like a graham cracker. Different animal. And so one of the recipes I sent you, you grind your own wheat berries in the blender, and then you make the pancake batter in the blender. Because again, it doesn't make gluten as strong as regular flour, so you can just blend it all up and have a very smooth textured pancake batter that's easy to work with.
We are talking about pancakes on Food Friday. Julia Collin Davison is with us from America's Test Kitchen. You mentioned those recipes. I want to start actually with one that I think people are going to find pretty easy because it's called Easy Pancakes. tell us about, and I looked through, it's the ingredients I'd expect. Talk us through this one.
Yeah, this is early in the morning, pre-cup of coffee cooking. You know, like the coffee's brewing, but you got to make pancakes. And the thing about this recipe that I like is there's no buttermilk. Not that I'm anti-buttermilk, but I just never seem to have any on hand. And so this just uses just a little oil and eggs and traditional milk, which I always have around. It's just all-purpose flour, sugar, and the leaveners. Now, the leaveners here, leaveners means baking soda, baking powder. You need both of those. And that's the key. And the hardest thing in the morning is keeping baking powder and baking powder straight because they both look very similar. They both start with the word baking on the label. And then you have a little bit of oil in there and vanilla, which just brings it to a whole new level. It is just a bowl method. Dry ingredients in one bowl, wet ingredients in the other bowl. You gently stir them together. Again, leave it lumpy. Leave it lumpy. And then let that pancake batter sit for 10 minutes while you finish brewing the coffee and you get a cup of joe going, and then you heat up the skillet. And that resting time just helps those lumps hydrate so they're not lumpy, but you don't lose any of that leavening power, so they wind up being very fluffy.
That recipe is at WPR.org/Food Friday. In that recipe, Julia, on the griddle, you're frying, you're heating up the pancakes on oil. I use butter. Does it matter?
Butter tastes good, that's for sure. But the thing about butter is that it burns. You know, so the first batch might be good. The second batch, you're going to wind up with some burnt butter unless you're constantly wiping out the pan and putting a fresh pat in every time. And that butter can brown unevenly. Mm-hmm. So if you put enough butter in the pancakes or enough milk in the pancakes, you're not going to miss that flavor. But I use butter sometimes, too. Sometimes I even mix a little butter and a little vegetable oil. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. It really even browning, but that butter flavor.
We're talking to Julia Collin-Davison from America's Test Kitchen about pancakes on this week's edition of Food Friday. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about making awesome pancakes or not making bad pancakes? Do you have a favorite recipe you'd like to share? What's your favorite topping or filling for a pancake? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about pancakes on this week's edition of Food Friday. Our guest is Julia Collin-Davison. She's Executive Editorial Director for America's Test Kitchen and host of America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Country TV shows. You can call in with your pancake secrets, favorite recipes, or questions. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And what do you put on them? Maple syrup or something else? Call 800-642-1234. Find some great recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. To your calls now, John is with us in Beloit. John, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on. So my question is more of a logistics one. So at our house, somebody always ends up standing in front of the stove and actually cooking the pancake while everybody else is eating. Is there a way to keep the pancakes warm, right, without making them too soggy or too crisp? Because we put them in the oven, but it just doesn't turn out.
One of life's great questions, John. Thanks. Julia, what do we do?
Yes. Oh, the cook always gets shafted on pancake morning, don't they? The oven is definitely the way to go. Now, the trick with the oven, you want to put the pancakes, obviously, on something in the oven. And you'd think a rimmed baking sheet would be good, but actually put a wire rack in the rim baking sheet and spray that wire rack with some vegetable oil spray, because that way the pancakes won't stick. But also you'll get a nice airflow around the pancakes so they won't get soggy on one side. And keep that oven low, 200 degrees. Don't go any higher. You don't want to bake these. You just want to keep them warm. And if they're in there for longer than 10 minutes, you can tent them very lightly with foil, because you want some air to get in there, but you don't want them to dry out completely. So playing with that is definitely the way to get everyone to sit down at pancake dinner or pancake morning all at the same time.
Boom. There you go, John. They can cut up the like fruit and stuff while they're waiting, or they can be next to you frying up the bacon. I don't know. We'll go next to Dawn in Green Bay. Dawn, hello.
Hello. Hi, I have a tip on a buttermilk substitute. She said sometimes when she likes to add that, she doesn't have it in her cupboards. But my mom told me years ago to take regular milk, a cup of regular milk, and a tablespoon of vinegar, just white vinegar, and stir it into the milk, and it curdles the milk, and then it has the flavor of buttermilk, and you add it to the pancake.
Wow. Have you tried this, Dawn? Yep. Have you done this?
Yes, and it's really cool because it starts to thicken just as you're stirring it.
Wow. Julie, have you ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a great trick. You can also do it with fresh lemon juice. It has to be fresh, not the canned stuff. And sometimes I think the lemon juice adds a nice flavor to, you know, just a little more fragrance to the batter. You can also take a whole milk yogurt and add a little milk to water it out, and you get a very similar flavor, or sour cream.
Dawn, thanks for the suggestion. Julia, we've got a couple more recipes I want to touch on. We're on the buttermilk topic right now, and you shared mm-hmm. some buttermilk pancakes with us. They're at WPR.org/foodfriday. What's the key to a good buttermilk pancake?
Yep. Well, again, don't over whisk that batter. Leave it just a little lumpy with a few streaks of flour in there. Use buttermilk. Use good buttermilk if you can find it. And also add just a little bit of sour cream. Just reinforce that tangy buttermilk flavor so you can really taste it. And then, you know, we didn't talk about this earlier, but when cooking all pancakes, there are three pretty invaluable tools. And the first one is a good nonstick safe flexible spatula for flipping the pancakes. That is an absolute must. You know, if you don't have one of those, they're not going to be round. You know, they're going to be all over the place, kind of amoeba-shaped, because when you try to flip them, they'll just kind of run into one another. The other thing that I really like to have is an electric griddle, and for a couple reasons. The first is you can cook a lot more pancakes at once. So if you're the cook and you're trying to get the batches out so everyone can sit down, fewer batches, so it saves on time. And also, it's easier to moderate the heat on one of those electric griddles than it is on a stovetop, so that once you find your setting, you know it forever, and you get beautiful pancakes every time. Last but not least, now this is not crucial at all, but they make these pancake batter portioners. It's like a little, you know, a thing you hold up and you press a button and pancake batter comes out the bottom, and then you can stop the flow of the batter just by releasing the trigger, and they work really well. If you want perfectly round pancakes, that is how you do it.
Interesting. Now, before we let you go, I want to touch on the third recipe, and this is great because people are out there thinking, I can't do gluten. I can't get a good pancake. We've got a gluten-free pancake recipe you shared with us. Is it good?
It is amazing. We worked really hard on our gluten-free cookbooks that we put out a couple years ago, and the thing is, at the end of the day, people couldn't tell the difference between a gluten-free pancake and a regular pancake. And the problem with gluten-free is that there's no gluten. And so you use all these other flours or blends of flours to replicate the flour, but none of them build gluten. And gluten is a magical thing. It creates structure. It creates chew. It holds on to air bubbles. And without that, things just they wind up flat. Very flat. And so in order to give the gluten-free blend a little bit of help in aerating, you have the baking powder and the baking soda, of course. But if you separate your eggs and you just get out the little hand whisk, and you whip those eggs just to get them fluffy, and then you fold that into the batter, that really helps you get fluffy gluten-free pancakes without the gluten.
That's fantastic. Julia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Pancake on.
I will. Julia Collin-Davison is the executive editorial director for America's Test Kitchen and host of America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Country TV shows. She joined us for this week's Food Friday to talk about pancakes. We've got the three recipes we talked about, easy pancakes, buttermilk pancakes, and those gluten-free pancakes at WPR.org/Food Friday. Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced this week that the social media giant would move in a new direction, one he says that would focus on privacy. The company has faced a lot of criticism over how it used the data of its users, and the announcement that it's pivoting to privacy has some wondering whether this is a way to corner the social media market. Steve Knoll is a marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg had this, I don't know if he called it a manifesto. Other people have. There's a lot in it. What were some of the key points? What are some of the key changes that it seems to suggest might be on the way for social media users?
Well, one of the things is that they want to roll out some new places on the Facebook platform and its related platforms like Instagram and WhatsApp, as to areas that people can feel are a lot more private, secure, with encrypted data that will not be available traditionally to be harvested for advertising. Now, part of this big, long 3,000-word thing, manifesto, was a lot of non-details, like when this is going to happen, and certainly a lot of unanswered questions like, this seems to run contrary to Facebook's basic business model. So how is this going to impact the stockholders?
And it seems to suggest the metaphor of a living room has been put out there. So right now you put something out on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, some of those big ones, everybody can see it,
correct,
more or less.
Yeah.
And you can change that with privacy settings. This, it's like, okay, me and my group of 10 friends or family members, we have this more private space where we're talking and nobody else, maybe not even Facebook supposedly, sees what we're doing.
Yeah. And that's the whole idea before. You know, what's missing in all this is, you know, you mentioned privacy settings. The vast majority of users don't adjust their privacy setting. Many people don't even know there are privacy settings. And I think that may be part of their thinking of this, is they can roll this stuff out for the handful of people who are genuinely concerned about this, but the masses are not going to take advantage of that, and therefore that data will still be available and won't mess up their business model. So that in and itself brings you a whole ethical slope of how transparent, how honest are they actually being if they're saying, yeah, we're going to do all this stuff, but in the back of their minds, they're going to be like, the vast majority of people aren't even going to bother to do this.
And you mentioned, I think, an important point. When we think of Facebook, we think of, you know, the big social media thing with, what, a couple billion,
2 billion
accounts now.
Yeah.
But it's also Instagram and WhatsApp and then a lot of other things that people might not have heard of. And it seems like some of what Mark Zuckerberg is talking about is really connecting some of those. There might be common messaging services and saying, hey, we are a one-stop shop for all your communication needs?
Correct. Yes. And that's the other thing that is starting to become a lot more discussed, is Facebook and a couple of the other big tech companies, you know, like Google, like Amazon, there is some talk, you know, are they too big? You know, are they becoming monopolies? You know, is that something that potentially we are looking at some antitrust laws and then possibly breaking these companies apart like they did to the Mobile phone company back in the day? So that's something that is not necessarily, you know, the immediate future, but I think they're looking down the line as to what can we do to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, Senator Elizabeth Warren, presidential candidate, talked about that very thing
that
today.
Specific thing today was brought up, and she's not the only one that's brought up that issue. That's definitely been, you know, kind of buzzed about in the last couple of years, and especially now with all the data breaches that have happened, I think a lot of people are starting to look at these companies and saying, you know, they're almost too big.
Right, and something that people have been pointing to happening is if Facebook or Apple or Google sees a company, a small, innovative, upstart company that might compete with them in the future,
They buy it. That's the business model. I mean, you really look at something like WhatsApp. That was an independent company, and Facebook said, wow, there's a lot of personal information being transmitted on that advertisers would love. Let's buy it and integrate that into our ecosystem. And that's just how the tech world works.
Talking to Steve Knoll from Madison College, looking at a new statement, an announcement from Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, looking toward maybe big changes to the future, saying they're focusing more on user privacy. Steve, Facebook has had a series of scandals, if you want to use the word, issues where people have been very critical of them. One of those is how they use data that they collect, how apparently unaffiliated companies might be collecting. If you use Duolingo, as I do, the language learning app, Facebook gets that info, whether you know it or not. They have information accounts for non-Facebook users. Yeah. There's kind of a shadow profile there. Does any of this address that? Any of this new statement address that?
Well, the statement is a pretty vague statement, and there's a lot of questions behind that. So, you know, one of the big issues that a lot of people don't realize is just how these tech companies really make it easier for users to cross-pollinate their information. So, for example, if you use a Gmail email to log into Facebook, Facebook and Google both get all your data. So they're talking about, you know, should they start to pull that stuff apart? A lot of independent tech companies use Facebook-friendly algorithm software when they're building an app because Facebook is so well advanced and easy to use for them. So they just include that in their app build. So you may not even have Facebook or use Facebook, but yet your data, because you use a workout app or something, is reporting to Facebook. And of course, you know, nobody reads the terms of agreement when they download this stuff. A lot of this does come down to, you know, consumer responsibility, but nobody likes to talk about that.
Another issue that's come up a lot for Facebook is content moderation, mm-hmm. how Facebook is used for nefarious purposes, foreign countries and their intelligence services trying to sway elections. On an even more serious note, the military in Burma using Facebook to motivate genocidal attacks.
Correct.
Now, what we're hearing from Mark Zuckerberg is, okay, content is going to be encrypted. We at Facebook don't even see it necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then it comes out at the user end. Is this a way for them to wash their hands of the responsibility to police what
a
content's
bit,
there?
A bit. And that's part of it. Is when you're talking about data, you know, as soon as you build a perfect encryption, someone will crack that encryption. So I think this is kind of a kick the can down the road statement that says, hey, we're doing all this, and at the end of the day, we're doing the right thing. And if somebody breaks it, they're actually the bad guy. You know, that Facebook does kind of have a history of having a lot of faith in humanity to do the right thing. And as we know that humans are not perfect and somebody's going to exploit it. And, you know, broad statements like that, people are starting to take that a little more suspect, as we need to see a little more concrete details. And that's what this, you know, this very long statement that he put out was very long, but it didn't have a lot of detail. They didn't even give a timeline as to when they're going to roll this out.
Is this a PR move, do you think?
Absolutely.
Like, okay, we've got all this criticism.
Oh, absolutely. This is totally, I mean, Facebook is addressing it. Don't get me wrong. They know they have a problem. But it's a big problem. It's going to take time and patience. This is a major PR move that ultimately is like, give us more time. You know, I do think at the end of the day, I think Facebook would want to do it right, but there's a lot of pressure for them to do it quickly. And when you do things quickly, you don't always get it right, which leads to more problems. So I think they are trying to buy themselves some time with this. So maybe at the end of the day, this is a good thing for us. But of course, everybody wants this today.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of the concerns people have in hindsight about developments in social media, people are trying to be quick to get their product on the internet, mm-hmm. And then deal with the fallout and the problems kind of reactively.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's room for a really proactive approach to say, okay, let's think this thing through, take a year or two,
weather the storm. No, that's the kiss of death. That will absolutely... The public outcry about that would be a PR nightmare. You know, and even though it's the right thing to do, consumers at the end of the day, they're not gonna wait. They're gonna go somewhere else. If you are trying to, you know, sell cupcakes and you come up and say, you know what, I really wanna spend another month perfecting my cupcake recipe, I'm gonna go buy my cupcakes at a different store. So, and you will see that if Facebook says we're gonna take time to do this, people are going to gravitate to other platforms that may not be as secure, but they're part of the thing too is Facebook gets all the attention because they're the biggest. The reality is all the social media companies are doing this. This isn't just Facebook, but they get all the blame for it. So there is a little bit of, you know, they're putting the spotlight as they should. They should be held to high standards. But at the end of the day, all the tech companies work this way. That's the business model. Nothing's free. Consumers think it's free. It's not. You are selling your privacy for the ability to talk to your cousin in, you know, Kansas three times a day through Messenger. Okay. So that's the issue. People will, if you're not giving the product today, they're not going to wait. They're going to buy it somewhere else, even if it's not as good.
It's some of the things that will change with Facebook or other social media will be driven by market forces or government regulation. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to what you were talking about earlier, what individuals can do, what consumers can do. What kind of advice, given the current state of Facebook and other social media, what kind of hygiene do you recommend we practice
The very
online?
First thing you do is realize that everything has a privacy setting. Every system, you need to figure out where that is, how to access it, and walk yourself through it. Actually, the Facebook privacy setting is pretty user-friendly, and it's pretty complete, and they give tutorials, and we're talking something that takes a minute to do. The vast majority of Facebook users have never even accessed that. So right away, you know, this is really a problem from consumers, but of course you can't blame the consumers. It's the big bad Facebook problem. That's the biggest thing. And if people would do that and just be a little more aware that, you know, there is no such thing as digital privacy, that would help solve a lot of it. But at the end of the day, they feel like they're talking to their cousin about, you know, super secret stuff, and they think it's a private conversation, but, you know, you're not paying for it, so someone's making money on it.
And when it comes to our data being used to sell stuff to us, we just have to accept that right now in the current state of regulation.
Are you going to pay?
That's just going to happen.
Are you going to pay $5 a month for Facebook, $5 a month for Twitter, $5 a month for Snapchat, $5 a month for Instagram? No, you're not. So you could. We could have social media that doesn't collect information if you're willing to pay a nominal monthly subscription fee. But every survey, every poll, when they've asked consumers that, has been overwhelmingly absolutely not. And what business is going to start a new social media based on a revenue subscription model when you have an overwhelmingly we won't go there attitude from consumers?
We'll leave it there for now, Steve. Always good to talk to you.
Cool. Thank you.
That's Steve Knoll, marketing professor and social media expert at Madison College. He joins today to talk about recent privacy changes announced by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg and some of the reactions to that move.